Hello. Before we get started, just a quick ask. If you are enjoying this podcast, please go over to iTunes and leave a rating and a review. Subscribe. If you're on Spotify, if you could follow, or if you're just out on Twitter or in the street, just tell a friend, tell someone you know that you think would like it. It'll just really help other people be able to find the podcast. Thank you. There. Welcome back to Their Soulmates, a Ted Lasso podcast. My name is Tori.
And I'm Kevin.
We are here to take a deep dive into the characters of Ted Lasso and Rebecca Welton, how they are connected, and why we think they are soulmates. And insert witty joke there, because we couldn't think of anything. Even with all the rom-coms.
See, I know, it's too the much rom-com references. We were trying.
Yeah. It's got to just be if it comes to us, because otherwise we just spend way too much time thinking about it and it's not good. Now, this episode is called Rainbow, and it was first released on August 20th of 2021. It was written by Bill Rubel and directed by Erica Dunton. Quick summary of the episode. I put that this episode is a charcuterie board of rom-com references.
Oh, and that's shows good.
It shows us the different ways that the characters show and receive love. The first time we see Ted and the team in this episode, they are watching replays of a previous game. And they didn't do so well. And like Jean Mas, I think that's how you say his name, messed up a goal and Isaac calls him out on it. So Ted just sees that they're like starting to really feel down on each other and themselves. So he needs to step in. So he gets up there and he's like, hey, guys, hang on. And I love that Nate goes to blow the whistle again, because Nate has not learned his lesson about blowing whistles inside. And Ted's like, no, I gave you an indoor whistle.
I know.
Yeah, is that a real thing?
I don't know. I should have looked it up for the show, but I thought that was funny that they actually gave him, because he keeps blowing the whistle.
He's trying and nothing is happening. So Ted gets up there and he kind of gives this great speech. Now, this episode we mentioned already does have a lot of different rom-com references in it. And I think that's interesting for a show that is so like, it's just another way that this show kind of breaks down men and masculinity in a different way. Because this is a show about football and it has a mainly male cast.
Right.
And they are adding in a lot of rom-com references. And they're not making fun of them. They're totally doing it in a way
paying homage to them.
Yeah, they're totally paying homage to them. The writers and the actors and the way they're interwoven into the story. So it was just a really interesting thing to see, because I feel like rom-coms have the reputation of being mostly for women, even though I personally don't really enjoy them that much. But and
there are some.
No, yes. The older ones, yes, I do like a lot. I haven't seen like any of the recent ones in a few years, but there's a Sandra Bullock one that I'm going to see, and I know that you have no interest in it, but I don't care because I love Sandra Bullock. So, and you know what? Sandra Bullock didn't get a mention in this episode. That's a bummer.
I thought he said her name at some point.
Does he?
I don't know. Maybe not.
So Ted gets up in front of the guys, and he's like, listen, I don't really care what our record is, but I hear the chatter and what people are saying. And they're saying that there's something wrong with us. But he says, the way I see it, there's nothing wrong with us. We're okay. And it's because I believe in communism. And everyone's like, wait, what?
It's like, uh-oh.
Yeah. And then he says, rom-communism, that is. So he starts talking about how rom-communism is a worldview that reminds us that romantic comedies with folks like Tom Hanks, Meg Ryan, Julia Roberts, they all start listing them. Drew Barrymore, Matthew McConaughey, the three Kates, Beckinsale, Hudson, Winslet. And then someone says Blanchett. And Coach Beard says, it's a different spelling. He's very offended. Renee Zellweger from the Bridget Jones Diaries movies. They all tell us that if these people, attractive people who live in these amazing apartments and have interesting jobs, usually in some creative field, can go through lighthearted struggles and still end up happy, then so can we. And then he tells them that they are not this is not the end of the story yet. Right now, they're in the dark forest, and they need to get through the dark forest so that they can have their happy ending. But no matter how it ends, it's going to end the way that it should be. And so they just kind of need to do their best and go along for the ride and not put too much pressure on themselves.
There you go.
Yeah, it was a sweet little speech and interesting. And I also think that he is kind of giving a metaphor for the show as well. Like, the show gets very dark in the second season as right. opposed to the first season. But it's not the end yet. So hang on, everybody, because sometimes you got to go through this stuff to get to the end.
Oh, I like that.
Then Isaac says, yeah, everybody, listen to him. Stop playing like shit.
Yeah, not, Isaac did not get anything out of that speech.
I also love when Danny pipes up with Jennifer Lopez. And Ted's like, that is a great call, Danny, and not a beat too late.
I know. Not because, at all a beat too late. Yeah,
because it definitely was a beat too late, sweet Danny. We should also note that Dr. Sharon is there just kind of quietly taking notes in the corner and making Ted all nervous and uncomfortable.
Yeah, she always does.
So they go back to the office and Ted says to the guys, it's Beard and Nate in there. And he's like, do you know what's going on with Isaac? Because Isaac is in a worse mood than he normally is. And Isaac is now who is the team captain after he's taken over for Roy.
Right.
Nathan says, maybe it's piles. Do you know what piles are?
No, I don't.
It's hemorrhoids.
Oh.
And the only reason I know that is because of Outlander. Because I've been reading and watching Outlander. It's kind of an old British term for hemorrhoids.
You now watch two shows that refer to hemorrhoids.
As piles.
As piles.
Yeah, probably another one too, and I just can't remember it now. And Pile. Beard's like, oh man, I've accepted aubergine. Do you know what aubergine is?
No.
Eggplant.
Okay.
And snogging, do you know what snogging is?
No.
Making out.
You just looked everything up?
No, I knew aubergine and pile and snogging and piles already.
Stupid,
I knew them all. But he's like, but piles I just cannot take. He's just drawing the line there.
Yeah, like why?
So then there's this whole little exchange here about Sheffield Wednesday, which is the name of one of the teams that they're playing. And it's kind of almost like a who's on first.
It is. It's like who's on first, what's on second.
Yeah. Where Ted is very confused as to when they're playing Sheffield Wednesday because they're not playing on Wednesday. Oh, wait, are they playing them Wednesday? No, they're playing them Saturday. And you can just tell that Beard's kind of like, I fucking moved all the way across the world to work with this guy so that he can drive me crazy on a daily basis. But he loves it. Dr. Sharon comes into the office and again, now he's allowed to say doc. So he's all excited that he can say, hey, doc. And Sharon asks, is Isaac okay? And he's like, no, he's not. And he says he's a wigwam in a teepee right now. And she's like, what does that mean? And I like that she asks Beard.
I know. Like she doesn't even look at yeah. Ted, like right to Beard.
Yeah.
What does that mean?
I'm not getting any answers here. So let's, Nick, Beard's reading a Nick Hornsby book.
Oh, there you go.
I wonder which one it is. And he says, no, he is a wigwam in a teepee. What does that mean? And he says, two tents.
Yeah, he's two tents.
Yes. And they think they're very funny. Dr. Sharon offers to talk to him. And he's like, oh, no, we got it. Don't worry about it. So she leaves. And he says, we know exactly what Isaac needs. And after she leaves, they're like, what do you think Isaac needs? And he says, I have no idea. Yeah. Ted says, normally in this case, he would have the team captain talk to him before he intervened. But Isaac is the team captain. So they have a conundrum. And he's like, I can't have Isaac pull himself aside because then we're getting dangerously close to messing with the, and Nathan's like, dark arts. Coach Beard says, space-time continuum. And he's like, that's exactly it. Nerds.
I know. They are nerds.
I know, but it's great. So Ted says, Isaac is a big dog and the only one that's going to be able to talk to him is another big dog. And Nate's like, I'll do it. And Ted just starts laughing.
I know.
And Nate looks a little like, huh? And then Ted looks at Beard and Beard's not laughing. And he's like, oh, hell, you were being serious. And he's like, you knew he was being serious? And he's like, oh, yeah. So it's just funny here how, like, one, I think it was interesting that Nate even volunteered to talk to Isaac, thinking that he's a big dog.
Right.
And then just the fact that Ted kind of laughed at him. is not going to sit well with Nate, even though Ted didn't mean anything bad by it. He just wasn't expecting Nate to like come out with that. Foreshadowing right there. I keep hitting my watch against the desk. It is.
That is absolutely foreshadowing, which obviously we didn't realize first time we watched it.
No.
Now watching it a second time, you know.
It is. Yeah, it's funny because there were always little things with Nate, you know, like him calling Rebecca a shrew and small things here and there where you could see that he kind of had some thing
right,
with him, like something was off.
Right. So, and it was building in him maybe that it was eventually going to like blow, but you didn't know what was going to. Anyway, yes. We don't want to ruin it for.
Well, no. We can spoil season two.
Okay.
Because I figure.
Spoiled.
We just didn't spoil season two when we were recording season one, but now that we're in season two, I don't think you should listen to this until. You've watched the whole thing through anyway. So then Nate just kind of with his tail between his legs goes back into his office and Beard yells, "I can accept Fanny." Do you know what Fanny is?
Fanny?
Yeah.
I can accept Fanny. I mean, it's not the obvious, it's the rear end.
No, and that's
but it
a problem.
Is the vagina.
Yes, because okay. There's fanny packs here. Right. Yeah, that we refer to.
I did
to.
Know that.
And that's, and here, I guess, although a fanny pack does technically cover your vaginal area.
Right.
Vulvus area.
Vulvus.
But, yeah, here, fanny always has meant behind, and there it means vagina. So when they hear fanny pack, they think that that's pretty funny.
That is funny. I mean, when you think it in that respect.
Now we go to Rebecca and Keely, who are kind of hanging out in the hallways because Keely's set up a table with coffee machines.
Espresso machines.
Yeah, it's nice. Each of the players are going to get one because she's hoping that they will put it on their social media and do like a cross promotion with Nespresso. And it's like a marketing thing that she's involved in. So she hears Rebecca giggle and she's like, "Did you just giggle?" And Rebecca's like, "I don't know, maybe." And then she's like, "And now you're pretending to be shy, Rebecca, who doesn't actually exist. So something is up."
Doesn't actually exist.
And Rebecca just kind of gives her a look. And then the guys come out at that point. So Keely says, "Oh, hey, guys, grab one of your coffee machines on the way out and take it home." She's like, "Because I'm amazing at my job." And Rebecca's like, "Listen, if you're amazing at your job, you don't need to tell people that you're amazing at your job." But Keely says that's not how it works anymore. You need to brand yourself.
All about branding.
Yes, all about branding and marketing, which we know Keely knows about. So the guys take the machines. Some of them have some funny comments about what they can or cannot do with it, how they're planning to post it. I think, what is the goalie's name? I can't remember. Zorro. That's right. Because Ted kept calling him Zorro. He asked, "Can I just give this back to you and you give me cash?" And she's like, "No, take it home.
And you give me cash." And he says, no interest in making an espresso or coffee or trying to use it. He's like, "Can I just get cash?
Yeah. Can I just have money for this?" Then Keely hears Rebecca gasp and she's like, What's going on? She's like, "The mystery man that I've been talking to on Banter," and Banter is the app that Keely's working with that you don't have pictures. It's just words. You just talk to the person, so you have no idea what anybody looks like, has just quoted Rilke. And Rilke, I had to look up, is a German poet. He died in like 1926.
Wow.
But I think a lot of his poetry became more popular again in recent years because it's been used in a lot of like self-help books and stuff like that. So this impresses Rebecca. And she reads the quote, which is, "Our deepest fears are like dragons guarding our deepest treasures."
Wow.
And Keely says, "Oh, is it possible that you're writing letters to a hung poet?" And then Rebecca says, "Is that a joke from Sex and the City?" And she's like, "No, but thank you."
Yeah, right. Like Sex and the City is just genius.
Well, and it's funny because that's not the first time Sex and the City has been referenced on this show. And one of the writers, Jamie Lee, I believe, is a huge Sex and the City fan and has like a Sex and the City podcast. So I think that that's why a lot of these Sex and the City references get. I wonder if she is as disappointed with and just like that as everyone else is.
I don't know. I was going to say something about that, but
Yeah.
I mean, I didn't know you would, so I didn't, but.
We only watched the first episode.
Yeah.
But.
No, I think we watched a good amount of the second.
Oh, did we? Okay.
Yeah.
But one of the podcasts I listened to, Bored AF, it's Stephanie Wilder Taylor and Cicely Knobler. They talk about Sex and the City and they kind of recap just like that, among other things. And it's, I've just been listening to them tear it down and it's just as entertaining.
Better
than the show. Yes. It seems just like a hot mess and I don't understand what they were going for. Anyway, okay, we're back. So Keely's like, I love that you're so excited, you know, about banter. She's like, this is a place where minds can come to undress. And then she's like, oh, that's really good. I'm going to write that down.
Yeah.
But Rebecca's like, well, yeah, but I mean, I am still on the other dating sites. And she names the other dating site as Tumescence.
Yeah, yeah.
And Keely's like, what is that discourse like? And she's like, less revealing, but more revealing. And then she just shows Keely her phone. And so you can imagine that there is a picture of a dick on it.
Right.
And then she's like, where's the rest of it?
I know. And then she has to swipe.
No. Is she swiping to a full other picture?
I don't know. Maybe it was only half of it and the other half was in the other picture. That's what I thought.
I know. But like, why would you really... Was it a panoramic photo? Like, I just thought that was funny. Like, was it just that the photo wasn't loading on the whole screen? Or somebody actually was like, my dick's so big, I have to send it to you in two photos.
Probably that.
It's probably the guy that we're going to see later anyway, Luca. Now, Rebecca's back up in her office, and she's looking over her chat window with the guy on banter. This is a movie reference. So her name, her screen name there is Boss Girl.
Mm-hmm.
And his name is LDN152, London 152. These are from You Got Mail, where Meg Ryan's character was Shop Girl and Tom Hanks' character was NY152, New York.
Oh, okay. I was going to say, if they're exactly the same, it wouldn't make sense. But
yes, no.
I see. Wow, that's a good catch.
Oh, I didn't catch it. There is an article that has like every single... rom-com reference in this episode, which was a great resource. I mean, I caught some of them, but this one, I wasn't as familiar with You've Got Mail as some of the other movies.
Yeah, I mean,
so
I haven't seen it since 1996 or whatever.
I ended up actually rewatching it over, I was home alone for some reason.
Wait, You Got Mail? Yeah, okay. You Got Mail was the first one. I mean, not that there were two, but there were two that they started together that were...
Yeah, Sleepless in Seattle and You've Got Mail.
That's what it was. Yeah.
And then they're also in Joe Versus the Volcano, which I remember liking a lot, I don't remember that movie now.
Didn't we watch it?
Probably. So anyway, Rebecca's reading over, and so we see the Rilke quote, our deepest fears are like dragons guarding our deepest desire, and then I think the best thing about being anonymous, no need for small talk, only big talk, agreed? And she writes back, yes. So then he asks her, what are you looking for on here? And she doesn't really know how to respond to that. So she's sort of just staring at her phone. And then she realizes that Higgins is there because he kind of clears his throat and says, hello, Rebecca. And she's like, oh. And again, she hides the phone as if she was full on watching Pornhub on this thing.
I know. She does it all the time with the computer.
And she says to him, did you see what was on my screen? Higgins says, oh, no, I have 5 boys. I never look over anyone's shoulders to see what's on their screen. But Higgins, you're their dad, so you may actually want to be looking over your shoulders. I mean, I get it.
You don't think that was sarcasm?
Naked lady. No, because he said, I used to. He said, I used to look over, and then he kind of goes like,
I see.
Yeah, he's really saying that he no longer looks over their shoulder to see what's going on.
He doesn't want to see gross stuff. Yeah. I can only imagine.
No. 5 boys.
Oh,
yeah. Okay, now his phone rings, and you hear the tune She's a Rainbow playing by the Rolling Stones. And she says to him, he's like, oh, hang on, my wife's calling. He's like, I'll tell her. He's like, I'll call her later. It keeps it fresh. And then he's like, but I'll just text her to let her know that.
It's so ridiculous.
And she's like, your ringtone for your wife is She's a Rainbow. And he's like, yeah, that's our song. So he says it was playing the moment they met. And he tells her he was at a party playing Upright bass guitar.
Yes.
Air. No, I'm sorry. He was playing air bass.
Upright. Oh my God. I mean, that's nerdier than air guitar. Yes. Air upright bass. Like right. People may not even like know what you're doing over there. Like, what is he doing?
And it didn't work out so well. Because he had a beer in one of his hands. So he dumped it over his entire head. Mm. And he said that everyone started laughing at him except for one person. And that was his wife.
Mm, very nice.
Yes. It's a really sweet story. And Rebecca asked him, like, well, how did you put yourself across? And he's like, no, there is no branding yourself. You just need to be yourself. And she kind of takes that to heart. Now, this is interesting because we've heard Roy explain lightning.
Right.
So his advice to her was you should feel like you've been struck by lightning. But now Higgins here is describing his love for his wife as a rainbow. He says she is his rainbow. So I think we're getting these kind of different variations of how people feel love for a reason.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. Well, I like it's compared to like natural.
Well, yeah, yeah,
like rainbows and lightning right. And
weather phenomena,
natural weather phenomena and occurrences.
But like for Roy, that must be what falling in love feels like. And for Higgins, love for him feels more like a rainbow. Like she makes his life vivid, or he sees things in, you know, more colors when he's with her. So I don't necessarily like. I think once we heard Roy say the lightning thing, I think everyone was like, oh, so now Rebecca needs to be struck by lightning. But I don't necessarily know that Rebecca needs to be struck by lightning, because that may not be what love's going to feel like to her. But she needs to find whatever it is that's going to be her lightning or her rainbow.
Yeah, true. But I mean, like, it's not necessarily like being struck by lightning, like, but like, I guess that feeling, that sudden feeling of like,
right.
You know, so, yeah, I guess in his way, it's like being knocked over the head or.
Right. You know. Yes. I'm curious, though, if we're going to see Rebecca, you know, being hit over the head with love, or if it's going to be something different for her when it manifests.
We'll see. Maybe something that's manifesting already. Sorry, I'm trying to keep it
the theme. There's actually a really good. Oh, and I think I retweeted or I posted the link. There was a really good Tumblr post that somebody wrote about this, where they were saying like Roy described it as being struck by lightning. Higgins describes it as a rainbow, but there are some signs that show that like if she does fall in love with Ted, it could be described as sunshine. And I can't remember what the reasons were, but it was a really interesting read.
Oh,
so,
interesting.
You know, yeah. Just kind of like these different elements of different ways that people feel love. Cause I think that not everyone probably feels it in the same way. None of us ever really know, because we don't really know what other people feel. So after Higgins finishes his story and he tells her, you know, you just need to be yourself and it's not about branding. She's like, huh? And she looks back down at her phone, and then replying to the question, what do you think you're looking for on here? She writes, love, I suppose. And then she throws her phone.
Right. I like that she throws the phone and then jams a biscuit in her mouth.
Yes. Comfort food right after she does something scary. And I also love that I'm not sure that those, I mean, I don't know if that's Hannah Waddingham's hands or if that's her stand-in when they do the typing stuff. But the fingers are nowhere near any of the letters
on the screen.
And it's not the first time. I've noticed it on other ones too. It's so funny. A little while later in Rebecca's office, Keely comes up with Nate. So earlier when the episode opened, Nate was trying to get a table for his parents at a restaurant that they like. And the waitress was kind of snooty with him. And she was like, well, I can reserve the table in the corner, but not the one by the window, which is the one he wanted. And he was kind of getting frustrated. So he went to talk to Keely, because his thought is if he was famous, like one of the footballers, then he would get stuff like that. He would get a free coffee machine. He would get the table that he wants at a restaurant where he wants. So he kind of went to Keely for advice about how to make himself famous. And she's like, no, you don't need to make yourself famous. You just need to make yourself a little more assertive. So she's gone to Rebecca to try to help Nate. So she tells Rebecca, Nathan needs a table at a restaurant. And Rebecca starts listing off all of these super fancy restaurants.
Places, yeah.
And he's like, no, it's a taste of Athens in Tooting. And she doesn't even look at him. She looks at Keely and says, did he just say tooting?
Tooting.
And she's like, yeah, he says it's his parents' favorite restaurant, meaning that it's the restaurant his dad complains about the least.
That's funny.
So Rebecca's like, all right, well, that's easy. I'll just buy the restaurant.
I know. It's just funny. Because it's probably small enough that she could.
I know. Absolutely. And then Keely's like, but wait, you know what they say? You know, if you buy a man a restaurant, he'll eat once. But if you teach him how to get a table, he'll eat at the restaurant until it becomes a Starbucks.
This is funny.
Yes, this is fantastic.
Everything's becoming Starbucks.
So Rebecca's like, okay, Nathan, you just need to be assertive. And he's like, okay, sure, yeah. And then she realizes that she's not getting through to him at all. And she's like, oh God, all right, we have a lot of work to do. This is probably the most time she's ever spent in a room with Nate at all anyway, right?
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Like, I don't think they've ever spent, except for when she brought him that, the contract to sign. She barely knew his name for half of the first season.
I know.
Rebecca and Keely decide that they're going to show him how to ask for a table assertively. So they set up a little thing in her office. You can tell, like, they've pulled two side tables and stacked them on top of each other.
Very nice.
Yes. They're playing. It's like little kids playing dress up. And they have Nathan come in, and Rebecca's observing, and he asks for a table, and he's like, yes, Nathan Shelley, party of three. And Keely purposely says his name wrong. Okay, Mr. Shelby. And instead of correcting her, Nathan's like, oh yeah, Shelby, yeah. I should have said Shelby.
Like, yeah. Why?
And Rebecca's like, no, stop. That is not your name. And he's like, oh, it's pretty close. And she's like, no, do it again. So then this time she says, Keely calls him Mr. Shelfie.
Shelfie.
And he just kind of yells at her. He's like, it's Shelly and you know it. And so Rebecca's like, oh, okay, too much.
Yeah, right. Like one extreme to the next.
Right. But that is also a good thing for us to see about Nathan's personality. So, like, he kind of has two modes, which is to be somebody that gets walked all over or to just kind of get angry. And he's not really good at finding that middle ground where he can still be confident yet not an asshole.
Right. It's one extreme or the other.
Yeah. And Rebecca says to him, like, you don't need to be loud. You just need to be commanding. And Nathan says to her, well, it's different for you because you command every room that you walk into. And she's like, are you kidding me? So she's telling him, like, you don't, every time I walk into a boardroom with a bunch of men, she's like, I feel like they look at me like a schoolgirl in pigtails. And that, Keely's very interested in Rebecca and pigtails. She's like, oh, you look great with pigtails.
I know.
Like, I do. And she's like, but you just have to be able to make yourself big. So she describes that before she goes into any room where she's going to have to do something uncomfortable, she finds a private place, she puts her hands up in the air, and she makes herself big. And they kind of look at her like they don't understand what she's saying. So she shows
them. She's got to show them, yeah.
Yes. And it's just a great scene because, one, like, Keely and Nathan are about the same height, I would say, especially with her in heels. Mm-hmm. And then with Rebecca behind them, she just looks...
She's just, yeah.
Like, they come up to her shoulders.
Right, she looks, she's like 2 or 3 feet taller than they are.
And so then when she puts her hands up in the air and she does like this little like roar kind of to herself, it just...
looks insane, like she's going to kill him.
It looks like she might rip both their heads off at any moment. And they both just kind of stare at her like, oh my God. And Keely's like, fuck, you're amazing. Now, Hannah Waddingham was saying in some interview that this was really, like we said earlier, the first time that she and Nick Muhammad is his name, Nathan had shared a scene together. And she said they could not get through it. They were laughing so hard. And she's like, you don't understand. He just has this twinkle in his eye when he does his lines. And then she said it got to the point where she had to look just off of his... She couldn't look him in the eye. She would
just
look off to the side of his face when they were doing her lines so that she wouldn't laugh. Now, in the meantime, Ted has found Roy at his favorite kebab place. Is that how he says it?
Kebab.
He says it funny. And the opening shot is three photos on the wall that are autographed. Like when you go to a restaurant, you see autographed photos on the wall. And the one on the left is George Wendt from Cheers, which is an inside joke because that is Jason Sudeikis' uncle. The middle one is Roy, obviously. And it just says, yum, Roy Kent. That's what he wrote on it. And then the one on the right is the lead singer from Mumford & Sons.
Yes, I'm pretty sure it is.
Yeah, it has to be because that's who does all of their music. So
yeah, I'm almost positive it's him. Although it looks like, in that particular picture, it looks like the, I can't think of his name now, but the actor that was in Bloodline and Friday Night Lights.
Oh, right, yes.
It kind of looks like him.
I can't think of his name either, but yeah. I don't see why it would be him, but it does look like him.
Yeah, it doesn't make sense. That's funny. But yeah, I'm pretty sure it's the Mumford & Sons.
So Roy's there just having some lunch, and he turns around, and there's Ted. And Ted's like, ooh, fancy running into you here, except that I called Keely, and I asked her exactly where you were. And Roy says that Keely warned him that a mustachioed surprise would anger him. And then he says, I thought it was going to be Wario or my great aunt Natalie. Do you know who Wario is?
I don't.
I didn't either, so I had to look it up. But it's an evil Super Mario character. It's Mario's arch rival, Wario.
Okay.
And you can tell his mustache is all like...
It's like jagged. Like
crimped, yeah, and jagged looking. I thought that was funny. So
he has purple overalls and green shoes. Very weird looking.
Aw. Now you're just making fun of Wario.
Well, he's evil.
He is. You're right. Okay, he deserves it.
Yeah.
Ted tells the guy at the kebab place, I'll have what he's having, which is a reference to When Harry Met Sally.
Yes.
And then he sits down with Roy, and Roy starts eating his sandwich, and he's like, why do you have to come here? He's like, this is like my church. He's like, I want to be left alone. And Ted's there to try to see if Roy would consider coming back to the team as a coach. And he's like, no, never. He's like, I enjoy what I'm doing right now. Right now, he's doing the pundit thing that Keely kind of roped him into, that he didn't want to do at first, and now he seems to enjoy. And he's like, people tweet about me with GIFs and everything.
I know, this is funny.
And then Ted says, well, some people call them GIFs, but I hear you. And that is a callback to the other. Well, remember when Rebecca said that she wanted Rupert to feel like he was being fucked in the ass with a bat over and over again, like a gif.
Right.
And then Higgins says, some people call them gifs.
Yeah.
So now he said gif, and then Ted says, some people call them gifs. So Ted explains to Roy that he is having trouble with Isaac, and Roy's like, oh, he's all up in his head, isn't he? And he's like, yes, and I need him out of there by Saturday, because that's when they're playing Sheffield Wednesday, we learned earlier.
That's right.
So Roy's like, all right, well, let me just finish my lunch and pray on it. And so Ted's like, okay. And he gets up and leaves. But did you notice that Ted puts money down for his kebab, but he only ate like three bites and he didn't take it with him?
Oh, I thought he did take it with him.
Oh, did he?
I don't know.
I hope he did. Because I was like, don't leave your kebab behind. It was nice, though, that he paid Roy for it.
Yeah.
So he leaves, and he's hoping that Roy is going to rethink helping out with Isaac. Roy does decide to help out, so he tells Isaac and Ted to meet him at a certain location at a certain time. So they're walking there, and Isaac's like, what are we doing and where are we going? And Ted's like, I have no idea, but we're just going to do it. So he's like, hang on, I'll text him. So when they text Roy, it makes his phone light up, and he's standing right there, and it like puts a glow on his face and scares both of them. So Roy has brought Isaac to where he used to play soccer as a child. Like, he points out where he used to live, and then he's like, that's where I grew up, but this is where I lived. And he shows the pitch here, and he's like, I want you to get out there and play with these guys. And Isaac, and there's men and women, I should say, not just guys. And Isaac is like, I'm a professional footballer. Like, I'm going to kill these guys. And he's like, oh, I wouldn't be so sure about that. So he gets him to go out there. And he's like, what you need to do is you need to remember that you play a game that you played when you were a kid, and it was a lot of fun. And focus on that and not whatever you're worried about as far as winning or playing well to win. So Ted's all excited. He's like, oh, can I do something? And he's like, no. Can I keep score? And he's like, fine. And then he's like, okay. And he's like, it's 0-0. And Roy's like, nil, nil, and nil, nil. And he's holding up his little hands.
Little zeros. Zeros.
Yeah. It works. Isaac gets out there. He has a great time with them.
Yeah.
Plays the game and remembers, you know, why he loves it.
Yeah. For fun.
Why he loves it so much. As they're walking back, now it's just Roy and Ted. And he tells him, great job out there, coach. And Roy's like, I'm not going to fall for this. And he says, you know, I don't want to try to convince you to do anything that you don't want to. But Ted, I think, believes in his heart that this is what would make Roy happy, because he knows that he misses football so much and could still be a part of the game, you know, in a different way.
Right. And like, because he's doing the commentating part, TV, right. But I don't think it's truly like a coach is the next best thing to being a player.
Right. Because you're on the pitch, down there, you're with them.
Yeah, you're helping him, you know, win or whatever.
Yeah. But he needs Roy to kind of figure that out for himself. But Roy's like, are you sure you're not playing games with me? And Ted's like, maybe a little. So then he says, Roy, I came here tonight because when you realize that you want to spend the rest of your life coaching with somebody, you want the rest of your life to start ASAP. And that is also a When Harry Met Sally line. Yes. Then he says, you complete our team.
That's Jerry Maguire?
Yes. Yeah. You complete me. And Roy says, you're an asshole. And then Ted says, I'm just a coach standing in front of a boy. Do you know what that one's from?
Yeah. Not at the top of my head.
Notting Hill. Yeah, that's what it was, but I did have to look it up.
Yes, okay.
Yeah. And he's like, listen, I am never coming back to Richmond. He's like, not now and not ever. Now fuck off.
Very like, Roy.
Yeah, so Roy. And Ted, oh, and then as Roy's walking away, Ted says, as you wish, which is Princess Bride.
Mm.
The next morning, Ted must have slept through his alarm because he's running late. Coach Beard's already downstairs with coffee for him. And he comes out and he's like, oh, did you set your alarm for 8 p.m. instead of a.m.? And Ted says, yes, sir, Steve Kerr. Mm. See, that's one of those where I said that he rhymes the... I think we were talking about this in another episode where he does that often with different people's names, rhyming it. And he says, well, you still got down here pretty quick. So this whole scene is to set up this joke right here, which is going, well, not joke, but line, which is going to pay off later. So he says, I think a fella should only take as long as the tune of Easy Lover by Phil Collins and Philip Bailey to get dressed in the morning.
Yeah.
And that's going to come back later in this season.
And I loved when it, and I specifically remembered, I think, this line when it comes back later. Right.
And now they're going to pay off a joke that they set up in season one. Ted comments that it's a beautiful day, that they're playing Sheffield Wednesday. And Coach Beard says, also known as the Owls.
Mm.
And then he's like, hey, you never finished your joke. And Ted's like, what joke? And he's like, what does a British owl say? That was from season one when Beard and Nate were mad at him because he wouldn't talk to them about benching Roy.
Right.
And he was trying to tell them the joke, what does a British owl say? And they kept running away from him and like pretending they couldn't hear him.
Oh.
And then they bring it back here and he says, whom? Whom?
That's so silly.
It is very silly. All right, so we're at the game now and we get another When Harry Met Sally reference, which is an older couple where they're doing like, you know, breaking the fourth wall, kind of the confessional shot. And they're talking about how they met and that he used to sit in her family's seats and the family wanted to kick him out, but she got him to stay and then they fell in love.
Yeah, I thought this was great.
Yeah, it was very cute.
I love this part.
It's also interesting to me that I think When Harry Met Sally probably is the one that has the most references in this episode. There are obvious other references to Bridget Jones and Jerry Maguire, Notting Hill, but if we're going to think that this story could be friends to lovers, it's interesting that When Harry Met Sally is, you know, the one that's referenced the most. So now we see Rebecca at the game with Keeley. They're up in the owner's box, and Rebecca is again talking to the guy on banter. Happy Saturday. What are you up to? She says she's at a football match. Mm. And he's like, oh, football fan. What's your team? And then she doesn't want to tell him because she says that's too personal. Now, the funny thing about this whole banter thing is the idea is that you don't see each other. So it really is based on like just you as people talking to each other.
Yeah.
But these two don't talk about anything that is important. especially we'll see when they finally meet each other. Like, they don't know how old anyone is.
That's right.
Or what they do for a living.
Right.
Or, you know, do you want to have children? Is that something that you have wanted? No deep conversations are going on at all, even though that's kind of what you're supposed to be doing.
Which is interesting because you think it would eventually would get to that.
Yeah, before, I mean, I guess they don't really show us how long they talk before they meet, but it doesn't really seem like they did. It's like a few texts back and forth throughout the entire day. Like, you'd think you would be having a little more of a deep conversation with someone if you were going to plan on meeting them. So Keely sees that she's typing away and all smiles and stuff. And she's like, will you just stop with this foreplay and just get on with it and meet this person and tell him that you own Richmond and you're fucking fit. And so you see Rebecca kind of smile and giggle, and then she goes back to typing something on her phone. Then they cut to Ted, and we see him walking down the hallway, and he's typing on his phone.
Right.
And kind of also got a little smirk on his face, like whatever he's typing or reading is making him happy. So they totally did this on purpose. I think they wanted the audience to think at first that she was talking to Ted.
Oh, yeah. Of course.
I definitely did.
So did I.
And plus, coming right off the Christmas episode where they were really close and like hanging out a lot, then it was like, oh, okay, so this is sort of a natural continuation of that. So as he puts his phone away in his pocket, Dr. Sharon comes out, and she's like, Coach. And then he just, like, goes completely spastic.
Insane. Ceiling, yes. Trash can, floor.
He's so uncomfortable in her presence. He has to try so hard to make her think that he's completely fine, and everything's fine, and it's great. And, like, not doing... No, there are no real emotions going on here. Like,
right.
He's totally putting on a show. Then Nathan...
And she ain't having it.
No. She's just like, you know, I'm sure that you're feeling a lot of pressure. And if you ever want to talk about it, my door is always open. And he's like, well, then why even have one? Bah.
Oh, my gosh. Yes.
And then we see Nate come out. And he is wearing a suit on game day. So usually the coaches dress... in khakis and their little jackets or jeans or whatever.
Sports, you know, their Richmond clothes.
Yes, but not Nate. Nate is wearing the suit that Ted helped him get in the gala episode of season one.
Yeah, and the jacket's a little tight.
See, and I wonder if they are doing this on purpose. And I think that they are. Like, taking in this jacket, because it's going to get tighter as the season goes on. And I don't really know... Like, if they did that, I mean, one, I would hate to be wrong and we're just, like, making a comment on the way Nick Muhammad is wearing that suit, but I don't think so, because I don't notice a shift really in Nick Muhammad, but I do notice that the suit gets smaller as the season goes on. The team's getting ready for the game, and they show Roy, who is at his pundit job, on set. They're doing all, like, the pre-show chat and stuff, and they're talking about, you know, this new guy's going to play. What do you think he's going to do? And Roy's like, you know what? I don't know what he's going to do. None of us know what he's going to do.
Right.
And we spend all this time talking about everything that we think they're going to do in the first half, and then we come back and we're all mad because they didn't do any of the things we thought they were going to do. And so he's like... Now he's realizing that maybe this isn't what he wants.
Right, like some switch has been flipped. Yes, and now definitely. Here we are. Yeah.
And then he sees on the screen that Isaac is doing kind of like the pre-game, what would you call it, like huddle or whatever with the team that he saw Isaac doing on the soccer field that he brought him to, or the football field that he brought him to. And so he's really seeing the impact that he had on Isaac. And Isaac's in a great mood, and he's, you know, doing new handshakes with the coaches and everything. And so Roy's like realizing, I got to get out of here. So he's like, you know what? I miss all of it, and I can't do this anymore. So he stands up and he takes his microphone off.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. And this is a reference also. It's from Sleepless in Seattle. So as Roy takes his microphone off and stands up, the guy on the anchor desk says, Roy! And he turns around and says, Jeff, I have to go. And I guess that's how Meg Ryan's character breaks up with her fiancé in Sleepless in Seattle.
I have to go.
Now we see Roy running through the streets, which is another one Harry Met Sally reference,
yes,
as Harry's trying to get to the New Year's Eve party. And he finds someone, he gets a taxi that'll only take him so far. Then he gets into another rickshaw and he gives the guy, because he gave the taxi guy all his money.
Like a bunch of money, yeah. Yes.
Now he has nothing but his watch. He gives the rickshaw guy his watch to get him as close to the stadium as he can. And then we know in previous episodes that Ted always leaves a ticket for him under a certain name. But we don't, it's not Roy's name. It's a different country singer.
Right.
So first Roy tries to just get in and they're like, who are you? And he's like, I'm Roy Kent.
Right. Like they're not having it.
Right. They're like, it kind of looks like him. So he goes and gets in line and he's like, I believe you have a ticket for Reba McEntire. And then they're like, oh yeah, yeah, here you go. And he gives him the ticket and he goes back and he's like, tells him to fuck off. And they're like, oh, it really is you. As this is all going on, there's a montage to She's a Rainbow.
Right.
And we see Higgins meet his wife there, and he goes out to get on the field. So it's cute that they're bringing the song back around. And I've already mentioned on this podcast that that's his actual wife, the actor.
Yes, you have really before. Cute.
So now Roy shows up. He's at the pitch, and he pops his knee back into place because he's done too much running, and he's hurt himself again. So, and then he just kind of starts to strut out onto the field. And as soon as the crowd sees him, they start chanting the Roy Kent chant. And we see Keely notice it, and she looks over, and she's like super excited to see him.
Yeah.
So I think that that also might be, and we see kind of Rebecca look over at her. Because remember in the episode when Jamie came back out on the field, I was like, I'm a little nervous about Rebecca looking at Keely. Because it could be foreshadowing a little bit of what comes up in this season, but I'm just hoping that there's not more to it. But I think this is interesting because her reaction to Roy coming out on the field is way different than her reaction to Jamie. Like when she saw Jamie, she was just kind of like, okay, this is interesting.
Oh,
but here
right,
you can
yeah.
tell that she's super excited to see Roy out on the field. Roy walks over to where Ted and Beard and Nate are standing, and Ted says, hello, coach. And he starts saying, you know, like, I'm so glad that you decided it. And Roy says, just shut up.
Right.
You had me at coach.
Yeah.
Which is also Jerry Maguire.
Yeah.
And so Beard, I love that Beard gasps when he says that line too. And you can tell Ted and Beard are a little teary eyed and like excited to see that Roy is there. And the only one who is not excited is Nate.
Nate. Yep.
Yeah. So at the time, I guess when we first watched that, I mean, we probably saw an inkling of like, huh. Like, maybe he feels a bit threatened that Roy is there. And I did think it was odd because I'm thinking, how many coaches does this team need?
Right.
Like, and
I thought the same thing.
Yeah. But my fear would be more for Ted than for anyone else because he seems to know the least about the game. But I guess he still has the most impact on the players than all of them. And so that is the end of the episode.
Yeah.
Okay. So what did we learn about Ted? I put that he loves rom-coms.
Yeah, I mean, that's plain and simple.
Yeah, he knows them all. He definitely knows.
Yeah, we learned that he wants Roy to coach.
Yes.
And is doing everything he can in his power to get him to coach.
Yep.
And obviously succeeds.
He does, yeah.
I think more importantly that he knows that's what Roy should be doing.
Yes, I think he knows deep down that that's really something that Roy...
Right.
Would enjoy doing.
Like he's not trying to talk him into something he doesn't really want to do. He knows deep down inside he wanted to do it, which shows in the end.
Yeah. For what we learned about Rebecca, I put that she is not as confident as people may think she is.
True. Yeah. That's a good point.
I feel like we kind of knew that already. We've seen that a bit, but I think the other characters learned that about her, Rebecca, maybe more than the audience did. Where Nate seemed very surprised that she doesn't just command a room. It's also interesting, we haven't seen Rebecca work much this season, and I don't feel like that's going to change.
Yeah.
So it was interesting to hear her at least talk about going to a board meeting with men.
Right, because he's mostly just sitting around her office.
Right, slamming her computer shut and playing on her phone most of the time.
Right.
All right, did you have what else did we learn about Rebecca?
We learned that she's actually looking for love.
Yeah.
I think after she got that pep talk from Higgins.
Yeah.
Sorry, I drew a blank there for a second. From Higgins. And then he said, you know, about being yourself and whatever.
Right.
And so I think she put it out there on that and that she's being serious, that she's looking for love.
Yeah.
So yes, we learn that she is indeed looking for love.
Yeah. Like, we know that she doesn't want to be alone, and I feel like that's another reason why I feel like this has to be a rom-com in a way, because in addition to all the other things it is, because she has always stated from the beginning that she doesn't want to be alone, and she wants a true relationship with someone that she feels secure with and happy with, and that is going to treat her in a way that she, you know, hopes to be treated. So it would seem odd to me, and I don't think they've built anyone else up that could be that person for her. And it would seem odd to me after all that if she ended up this series without a partner, because it is obviously something that the character is looking for. And then for what did Rebecca learn, I put that she needs to be herself and not put on armor when she is trying to find somebody.
Yeah, right. Don't immediately, you know, be defensive, you know.
Yeah, like she's... I feel like she's trying to go after things that look good on paper, because it's not going to get her hurt as much, and she needs to let some of that go. And then for what did Ted learn, I just had that he had to let Roy figure this out for himself.
Yeah. Yes. And I think maybe deep down inside, Ted kind of knew he was going to come around eventually.
Yeah.
In a way. But yeah, for the most part, he did. Yeah. You're right. He had to let Roy figure it out.
Yeah. Are they any more aware of each other?
No, because
they didn't see each other at all this episode.
No.
Which I didn't realize, I think, until we watched it tonight. But yeah, so not this time. Okay, so the next episode is called The Signal, and that is the one we will do next. Yes.
Okay.
So you can reach us on Twitter at Ted Becca Podcast, or go to anchor.fm/TedBeccaPodcast, and there you can leave us a voice message. And we will see you next time. Thank you.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.